The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Leadership Takeoff with Mo Glennard. In order to become an effective leader, you need to start with yourself. Whether you're just looking to become a better you, better manager, or be the company's CEO, you've got to take off to get to that destination. Now, here is your host, Mo Glennard.
And good day. Welcome to Leadership Takeoff, real leadership for real people. I'm Mo Glennard. I'm hoping everyone's all well. Today, we're actually going to be doing a multi-parter. We'll continue most likely next time. We're going to be talking about creative leadership, or more how effectively, how we can use creativity to be better leaders, whether that's in an innovative sense or whether that's just being better in general, being a better you, being a better manager, being a better leader in general. Creativity is part of that. It's an integral part of it. Now, before we go any further, we're going to actually do a little bit of an experiment. And what I'd like everyone to be able to do is to consider the tennis racket. Consider its shape, consider its size, consider its weight, consider its use, or what you think it's used for. Take some time and actually write down, if you have a pen and paper, write down how many uses you have for that tennis racket. And take your time. We'll be back to this in just a little bit. But in the meantime, while you're doing that, let's talk a little bit about exploration and discovery, both of which are key components to creativity. Kids seem to have this down pat, especially if they're younger, much younger, let's call it toddler age, maybe a little bit beyond that. They're unencumbered. They go wherever they want to go. They see whatever they want to see. They really don't have a perception of risk. The world is their oyster. If they see it, they want it. And without any restrictions, if no one is putting a restriction or if no one's watching them, they'll be here, they'll be there, they'll be everywhere. As a parent, I've certainly experienced that, and anyone else who is a parent or a caretaker of any sort certainly experienced that, turn your back for 1 second and they're gone, off over there. No conventions, no norms, they've got no knowledge of laws or morals or ethics. Not that they're doing anything necessarily wrong, it's just they don't have a frame of reference. They have unbridled creativity, unbridled thoughts that are going through their head. I'm sure every parent I know I have always wonder what's going through their mind right now. And then we grow up. Suddenly we have conventions, norms, morals, ethics, laws. We have jobs and family and bills and responsibilities. Suddenly we perceive risk and consequence. We become more and more risk adverse. We certainly don't want to suffer any consequences. We take off our explorer hats somewhere as we're growing up. We don't have time to explore anymore. But if we're not exploring, then we're also not discovering. And if we're not discovering, then it's very hard for us to be creative and maintain creativity. This exploration, this discovery, is key to both. Now, for a risk-averse adult, and we're all risk-averse in some sense, we have to take a little bit of a risk in a way that's the unknown. You know, for discovering, we're going someplace we haven't been before. That could be a little bit scary. We have to be able to go ahead and do that, though. How else will we discover? Now, many jobs have standard operating procedures, ISO, whatnot, and piloting. We have checklists and all sorts of different things that we have to go in and abide. There really isn't much of an opportunity to innovate. There really isn't much of an opportunity to do anything that deviates from those norms other than in extenuating circumstances. And even then, there's most likely a procedure for whatever actually happens. There's an old joke about ISO that ISO doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing something better. It just means that you've got it documented and you do whatever that procedure says. I heard somebody joke around once that said that your procedure could be that you stand on your head and eat donuts, and as long as you follow that procedure every time, then you qualify for ISO. Not quite sure about that, but sounds funny anyways. But even in the most rigid environment, there's innovation. There's creativity. There has to be creativity at times. And I'll use two examples, really, and both of those are related to either aviation or space. And the first one was the Apollo 13 in 1970, so ably shown in a more entertaining fashion by Ron Howard and Tom Hanks, I believe, played Captain Lovell. And essentially, they had an oxygen explosion on board while they were on their way to the moon, and they had to find a way to get back. The problem is they didn't have, in the explosion, they lost their carbon dioxide filtering system. We all know carbon dioxide is poisonous. And somehow, even though there was no manual and no way between the ground crew and what they were actually able to do in space, they jury-rigged a system out of nowhere, out of nothing, out of just bits and pieces and spare parts. And everyone made it back safely. A similar thing happened in 1989. United 232 out of Denver was headed to Chicago. And they had an uncontained engine fire, engine explosion, actually, that in the process severed all the hydraulic lines. They lost all of their flight controls. 296 people on board. There was nothing in the manual to tell them what to do. There was no procedure in there. But through process of elimination and through good usage of crew resource management, using everybody on board, which would be the pilots and a trainer for that particular plane that happened to be on the plane, and using thrust control, they were able to bring the plane down. And even though there were lives lost, most of the people made it off the plane alive, which they wouldn't have otherwise. So even in a rigid environment, there's opportunity for exploration and innovation. So how are you guys doing with those uses for the tennis racket? Let's look at this another way. What if we used all the ways that we can actually perceive something? Our five senses, plus one or two that aren't part of our typical five senses. You know, those five senses are sight and sound and smell, touch and taste. So we look at the tennis racket, and what do we see? We see some sort of border with a handle. We see some sort of stringed in a crossing pattern. We naturally think, of course, that's meant to hit a ball across a net or until a wall. It's a racquetball. We can say that it's a racquetball racket. We could say it's a ping pong paddle. But what if we said we wanted to use that as a snowshoe? It does kind of look like a snowshoe. It doesn't have to be what it necessarily appears. But let's go a little further. We have the other senses as well. What does that tennis racket sound like? Do those sounds evoke something else? Perhaps a musical instrument. What about touch? How does the feel? How does it actually feel? Depends on which part of the racket you touch, whether you touch the handle or whether you actually touch the string part. Does that remind you of something? Could it remind you of something? What about smell? Maybe it smells like something, maybe it doesn't. Maybe the strings smell like something. Maybe the tape on the handle or the leather part of the handle or whatever that may be, that smells like something. Does that smell evoke something? And of course, the final one I wouldn't necessarily recommend, but that's taste. I don't think you really can taste a tennis racket. But what if that pattern of the stringed part looks like something that you can taste? The idea is really to get away from the conventional. The way our mind works is all the time we have millions of ideas that are just bouncing back and forth. Almost think of it as in the old science fiction, the time warp, where you're floating through space and the stars are just zipping by at warp speed. And that's kind of what's happening in your brain. The problem is we have something that's called the stupid barrier. And the stupid barrier prevents us from actually consciously realizing any idea that is not really the tried or true without us even thinking about it. It just kind of disappears. We aren't able to use it. We don't even know that it's there. So what we have to be able to do is to somehow overcome that stupid barrier. Now, of course, in any sort of brainstorming session where people are thinking of ideas, somebody says, oh, there really no such thing as stupid ideas. And there really shouldn't be any non-stupid ideas. Every idea should be valid. But somehow there's a restraint. There's always a restriction. There's always something. But what if I said it doesn't make a difference? Even if you think it's stupid, even if you, whatever it is, just put it down on paper. Just go ahead and see what you can go ahead and do. Would something like that work? Now, part of that also relies on a sense of trust. You have to trust that if I put down something that is absolutely incredibly outrageous, immoral, unethical, it really doesn't make any difference. It's just ideation. We're just trying to think of ideas, that no one's going to rain down on you. No one's going to say, geez, that was a stupid idea. Well, we can't have that. There has to be a sense of trust. And of course, trust is a key component to any relationship, but trust is also a key to creativity. You've got to know that no matter what, it's just ideation. We're just thinking of ideas. There are no stupid ideas. Ultimately, what we end up with is some ideas that after they're all said and done and they're all tabulated, if you will, we have to have a sense of humor about this. And that's really the topic du jour today. We're going to be talking about humor and its particular importance in workplace, particular importance for leadership. Now, before we go to break, our break is 3 minutes. When we go to break, try writing down, think of a brick now. Instead of a tennis racket, think of a brick, your common brick. No stupid ideas, all the ideas are good, and write down how many uses you have for that brick. Now, no cheating, so there shouldn't be, well, I can build a wall for a house, I can build a wall for a building, I can build a wall for this. If you're building a wall, that's one idea. So you have to actually think of distinct. It doesn't have to be terribly distinct, but distinct enough that it counts as a separate idea. And what we'll do is when we come back, this is a little bit of an experiment, if you want to go ahead and let me know how many ideas you had for the tennis racket before we release the stupid barrier, how many ideas you're going to have after the break on the brick, and either on Twitter, hashtag MoGlenner, M-O-E-G-L-E-N-N-E-R, or Mo at Leadership Takeoff. We've done this experiment on many workshops, and let's see how it works over the radio. When we come back, Andrew Tarvin, our guest, our humor engineer, to talk about humor in leadership and creativity. We'll be right back.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you and your team ready for a leadership takeoff? Called by Bloomberg Businessweek a top business thinker on management trends and issues, Mo Glenner is a dynamic leadership and motivational speaker who has transformed cultures in companies big and small. As a professional GA pilot, Mo has created the Be the Pilot in Command and Leadership Takeoff series of personal and professional leadership keynotes, breakouts, and workshops designed to bring out the very best. Featured on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, Inc. Magazine, Leadership Excellence, LinkedIn Pulse, and other leading outlets, Mo will bring his highly engaging, informative, and entertaining talks and lead your team on a memorable journey to better leadership. Book Mo today for your next event at 574-274-7387 or go to www.leadershiptakeoff.com and be prepared for takeoff. After all, the sky is not the limit. It's just the beginning.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are listening to Leadership Takeoff. To reach Mo Glenner or today's guest, please call us at 1-888-346-9141. Again, that's 1-888-346-9141. You may also want to send an email to mo@leadershiptakeoff.com. Now, let's continue with Leadership Takeoff.
And welcome back. How'd you guys do? We'll get back with some of those responses in just a bit. Our guest today is Andrew Tarvin. He's a humor engineer. Teaches people how to enjoy their jobs more while doing them better. He's worked with thousands of people, hundreds of organizations, including many Fortune 100 companies. Best-selling author, featured in the Wall Street Journal, TEDx, and others. And he loves the color orange and is obsessed with milkshakes. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like those last two are some of the most important as far as identifying me. Certainly love the color orange, and I had a milkshake yesterday that was pretty solid. I was happy about it.
Important to have that milkshake.
Mm-hmm.
So, Andrew, tell me about your journey. How have you gotten to where we are now?
Sure. So it's certainly kind of unexpected. If you were to go back in time and tell, 10-year-old me that this is what I'd be doing, I would first, I wouldn't believe you because I wouldn't think that I was doing it. And then second, I'd be intrigued as to how you invented time travel. My background is in engineering. I have a degree in computer science and engineering. And ever since I can remember, I've been obsessed with efficiency. And then I discovered when I graduated from Ohio State with my degree, I started working at Procter & Gamble and discovered there that you can't really be efficient with people, because they have emotions and feelings and all that kind of stuff. And learned that instead of being efficient, you have to be effective. And for me, as an introverted kind of engineer, I didn't necessarily have the skills to do that very well. But luckily, in college, I had started doing improv comedy and started to realize that the same skills that I was using in improv and stand-up comedy were the same skills that I needed to be effective with other people as far as listening skills go and collaboration and those types of things. And so while at P&G, I started to explore more of this idea of humor in the workplace and discovered that it wasn't just me that was finding success with it, that there was actually a lot of research done around the value of humor in terms of making people more productive and less stressed and happier, and the benefits that it brought to an entire organization as a whole in terms of reduced turnover and increased engagement, et cetera. And realized that not a lot of people were talking about the value of it, so I started to do that, and then ultimately left in 2012 to focus on it full-time because it was something that I was very passionate about and felt like people needed to learn more about.
Okay. Now, I mean, I understand when we laugh, and again, I don't really have a science degree, and I don't understand the full science behind it. When we laugh, obviously, we're releasing endorphins. We can't help but feel better. But what's the science behind that?
Sure. Well, so part of it is just the receptors in our brain in terms of releasing it. It's a process that a lot of people actually think is part of our evolution that has been important to our evolution is this idea of humor and comedy, because some of it stems from back when, if you were out hunting and you heard a rattle in the bush, and you thought that maybe it was a saber-toothed tiger, right? And you're getting ready to run. You have this tension, right? You have this flight or fight response getting ready. And then you recognize that instead it was just a friend of yours or a small animal that's not going to hurt you. You have that release of tension. And so that laughter actually helps to evoke that release. It helps to release relax the muscles and increase blood flow through the brain and that kind of stuff. So there is part of it that is an evolutionary advantage, and then part of it is psychological as well. You know, when we have positive feelings and when we associate those positive feelings with people, we feel like we're closer together. We're our relationships are built together with that person.
Now, with your work that you've done with the Fortune 100 companies and other organizations, well, do you feel, obviously, through the work that you've done and the work that others you've done, that there's certainly a need? Why aren't more companies doing this?
Yeah, I think that the big thing that I kind of teach is that no one really thinks of humor in the workplace as a bad thing. Most people are kind of like, yeah, it would be kind of nice to have that. One of the things that I'm trying to promote is that it is a must-have in an organization, because you think of, you know, you think of some of the numbers of like 83% of Americans are stressed out at work, 55% are unsatisfied with their jobs, 47% of Americans struggle to stay happy, and it leads to about 70% of the workforce being disengaged, costing U.S. companies up to $500 billion in lost productivity every year. And that's just U.S. focused. You see similar numbers in European countries and other countries around the world as well. And so basically what it's kind of saying is that the current way of working isn't working. And I think a lot of the holdover is due to how we used to manage. You know, when we're heavy into factory work and everything was about efficiency of if you save 10 seconds on a process that resulted in millions of dollars of cost savings because it was repetitive movement, we still think in that mindset. Whereas now when we're working with knowledge workers, it's not going to be effective. And so I think people are sometimes held over in that older thinking. And also they just don't know that humor can be valuable. They think, we have this mindset where it's like, oh, I have to go to work and it has to be serious. And if I'm laughing, I'm not really working as hard. But in reality, a lot of times laughter and enjoying your work means you are going to work more effectively and for longer periods of time on the task at hand.
So would you say that we take ourselves a little too seriously?
Absolutely. I think so. A lot of times, you know, I don't think that just because something is serious work doesn't mean that you can't have a little bit of fun of how you're playing with it. There's an article a couple years ago coming out of CERN researchers who are working on the Large Hadron Collider and doing very serious work. They took an improv workshop because they recognized the value of improvisation as a way to improve their team building and their collaboration skills, and also in terms of how they approach their work.
Now, I know that in general, soft skills, other than some of the bigger corporations or maybe some of the newer entrepreneurial type things, and perhaps even in Silicon Valley as well, soft skills is a hard sell for a lot of companies. Why is that?
I think because in some ways it's hard to measure, right? If I come in as a, you know, my background is in computer programming. So if I come in with my technical skills and I say, oh, the way that I set up your web page can increase your conversion by 3%. You can then take a look at what is my current conversion rate? What would an increase of 3% result in? Oh, that's X number of dollars of additional sales. Whereas soft skills, it's hard to say, if I can come in and help your organization be more collaborative and communicate more effectively so that you don't have to send as many emails or so that you actually get a message across, it's much harder to say, oh, well, I'm going to save, you know, 5 cents for every email that's sent. So it's harder to quantify. But some of the work that I do, you start to look at things like, if you look at, say, turnover as one example, the average cost to replace an employee ranges between 20 to 150% of that person's salary. And so if you think of, oh, if you can reduce turnover, which in humor and soft skills is something that is valuable in helping that, they did a study and they found that about 33% or 31% of people leave an organization because of their manager. They like the work, they like the organization, but they don't like their manager, so they leave. And they have found in studies that managers who have a sense of humor, who are rated with a higher sense of humor, experience less turnover. People who report to them say that they're less likely to look for a job within the next year because they enjoy working for that manager. You can then put those two things together and say, oh, well, if you can use humor, if you can teach a manager to improve their soft skills, then you can reduce turnover, and you start to look at hard direct savings from losing an employee. So you can start to see some numbers like that, but it's complicated to do. Again, it's much easier to go back to say, oh, well, this technical skill either saves me or earns me X number of dollars.
Now, I think there's a misnomer. I know that they're related, but what's really the difference between humor and comedy?
Absolutely, yeah. So I would say that comedy is a subset of humor, right? If you think back to that old school logic problem of where you say that all lions are cats, but not all cats are lions. That's okay. How humor and comedy is. All comedy is humor, but not all humor is comedy. And so comedy is a subset. Humor is a larger picture of it. The way that I think of it is comedy is meant to be funny, right? You're trying to make people laugh, whereas humor can be more about, it's trying to evoke a smile, right? It's more about being fun than it is necessarily just being about funny.
So in other words, more of allowing people just to release or to vent in a positive fashion.
Yeah, to laugh or to smile, do something. It's all about causing amusement and doing something a little bit differently. So that could be going and watching a stand-up comedian as an entire organization, or it could be doing more of an interactive event. It's just about doing something a little bit different than the norm, just to get people to wake up a little bit to say, oh, this isn't like every other day that's happened.
Yeah, I know that some of the meetings that I put in place when I was working for a larger organization was I always had a Friday manager's meeting. And we had the Las Vegas mentality. Anything that was said in there could stay in there. And before you know it, we were all laughing about something or another. And it seemed to really help out everybody. So I can certainly see the value in that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I think that it can be even small things. I think meetings are a great example of that. One of my favorite things to do in meetings is to ask an interesting question that everyone goes around and answers. And one of my favorite ones is, you know, what is something that you think is true for yourself that you don't think is true for anyone else in this room? You know, so something that is true for you, not true for anyone else in this room. And I did that recently for a large group that I was speaking in front of in Spain. It was about 200 programmers. And I had people turn to each other, answer that question, and then was facilitating a little bit and talking with people afterwards. And so I asked one of the guys, like, what is something that you think is true for yourself, but you don't think it's true for anyone else in this room? And he said, oh, I think that I'm very handsome. And I was like, oh, wait, so you're saying the rest of us aren't handsome. Thank you. I appreciate that insult a little bit, I guess.
Well, before we go on break, some of the results we've gotten, I guess not very active on Twitter, but pretty active on the emails. And what I'm seeing right now is about an average of anywhere between 10 to 15 ideas that people came up with on the tennis racket. And this was before we talked about the five senses and talked about releasing from the stupid barrier. And I know I want to talk to you a little bit more about that when we come back from break. And we'll be right back.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
Are you and your team ready for a leadership takeoff? Called by Bloomberg Businessweek a top business thinker on management trends and issues, Mo Glenner is a dynamic leadership and motivational speaker who has transformed cultures in companies big and small. As a professional GA pilot, Mo has created the Be the Pilot in Command and Leadership Takeoff series of personal and professional leadership keynotes, breakouts, and workshops designed to bring out the very best. Featured on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, Inc. Magazine, Leadership Excellence, LinkedIn Pulse, and other leading outlets, Mo will bring his highly engaging, informative, and entertaining talks and lead your team on a memorable journey to better leadership. Book Mo today for your next event at 574-274-7387 or go to www.leadershiptakeoff.com and be prepared for takeoff. After all, the sky is not the limit. It's just the beginning.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to Leadership Takeoff. To reach Mo Glenner or today's guest, please call us at 1-888-346-9141. Again, that's 1-888-346-9141. 346-9141. You may also want to send an email to mo@leadershiptakeoff.com. Now, let's continue with Leadership Takeoff.
And welcome back. When we left for break, gone over the results first for the tennis racket, which was about 5 or 6 minutes in length, trying to think of all the uses. And after about 10 or 15, a lot of repeats, that's what some of the feedback is. But on the brick exercise, we're averaging 25 to 30. I had one guy that's actually said he had 40, David. I think David had 40 there. Good job, David. Andrew, what is it about that inner barrier that we have that just seems to restrict us from going beyond?
I think that a lot of it goes back to this idea of, you know, kind of being right or wrong. It's interesting. I do a lot of the work that I do with organizations is what's considered applied improvisation. So the idea of taking concepts, exercises, games, etc., from the world of improvisation and using them to teach a specific skill. So probably the most popular skills are things like communication, collaboration, creativity, etc. And one of the exercises around the mindset that's fundamental to improvisation called yes and. And yes and is all around how do we take an idea and build from there, basically. And in an improv scene, it works as, you know, one person says an idea, the other person says yes, and then builds on it. And it's interesting, when I do that work, I do it every now and then with younger organizations, with high schools and college students and stuff. And the younger the group is, the more they tend to think in a yes and mindset. As we get older, we start to think in this yes but mindset. We start to think about, yeah, we could do this, but this is why it won't work, or this is why we won't say this, or ideas like, oh, I could use a brick or a tennis, or take tennis racket. I could use a tennis racket in this way, but it's kind of silly or it's kind of dumb. So we restrict ourselves and filter because we don't want to look silly or we don't think that it's valuable. Whereas when we start to open up those ideas, sure, we might say one idea that's kind of silly, but that might lead us to another idea that's actually very practical. And so I think in some sense, it's having that restriction and a sense of humor or a sense of play, or even the instructions that you give in this exercise of remove the silly barrier, that kind of stuff, gives ourselves permission to open ourselves back up to this interesting idea.
Now, using those improv exercises, certainly with the having gone through a class or two myself, you know, starting off with no but and then progressing to yes but and then finally with yes and, you know, certainly people felt a lot better, felt like they had a lot more input with the yes and versus the other two.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much more, I mean, you see the change with the people in the exercises doing it, where the responses that you get when you ask how is that different, they feel it's more collaborative, it feels more enjoyable, the person was enthusiastic, you get a much better sense to it, right? And after the end of, you know, yes and, you get this idea of like, oh yeah, I want to high five the other person that I was collaborating with. Whereas you get the sense of yes but, to steal a phrase from a good friend of mine named Phil Nosworthy, says, you know, they say yes but, you want to high five the other person, but in the face with a chair, right? Like yes but is more combative and all that, whereas yes and is this more positive, collaborative feeling.
Now, I'm sure through your work you've seen, I don't want to quite call it case studies, but I'll say examples of humor in action. You have a story or two for us?
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen a lot of great examples kind of going through of what different people are doing, ranging from, you know, startups, I think, do a really good job of this in a lot of different ways of trying to make things more fun. So if you look at Google, consistently ranked pretty highly in terms of a great place to work because of the things that they incorporate in terms of access to ideas. One of the things that I like the most that they don't necessarily talk a ton about is the Google Talks that they do. They bring in very inspiring people to come in and talk about different things that aren't related to search engines in any way, but you know, they had Eddie Izzard, a comedian, come in one time, or they had Josh Kaufman come in and talk about, you know, the personal MBA, all these smart ideas that the employees themselves can find the way that they connect to and can be a great way to kind of see this inspiration. So things like that, ranging to my mom works at a place called Gorilla Glue in Cincinnati, Ohio, and they do a ton of great things for their groups. They organize a gorilla run where people would do a 5K in a gorilla costume as a way to just kind of do something different. And it's like, if you're doing that with your fellow coworkers, doing something like that on the weekend, to go into work and, you know, be productive or collaborative or honest with each other in a meeting is a lot easier.
Okay. Now, I think some people might be, and I know you talked about this before, be a little resistant to the idea of humor. Is that really more of just our resistance to change or to look at things differently?
I think it's a couple of different things. I ran a study through my site and found that only roughly a third of people use humor at the work regularly. And the two-thirds that don't, there's kind of three top reasons why they didn't. The first reason that they thought, the number one reason, is that they thought that their boss or coworkers wouldn't approve, which I kind of understand because, like, when you go into a workplace, it's not the norm for people to be having fun. You start to think that it's unwelcome. We have this idea in our head that work is a place that we go to and we're there from 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 or however many hours that we spend there, and we can't possibly have fun or enjoy ourselves. And so we just feel like that's the norm. But in one study of over 700 CEOs, they found that 98% of CEOs prefer job candidates with a sense of humor, right? And it makes sense. Like, if you were to go into a workplace and you have one person that you could work with that's very technically good, but and they have a sense of humor and they're enjoyable to be around, and then you have another person that's also technically good, but they're about as exciting as a brick wall, not to take away from your brick analogy, but it's that exciting. Who are you going to pick? You're going to pick the person that's more fun. And so part of it is around giving people permission to be able to actually enjoy the work, to have fun.
Now, I spoke with a colleague of yours for a book coming out soon, David Nile. Mm-hmm. I hope I pronounce his last name right. But one of the things he mentioned was, as far as the humor in the workplace, was that the more progressive companies are looking for someone that doesn't have a separate identity. And what I mean by that is who they are at work is the same person that they are on their personal Facebook page, or, you know, who they are after work. So, you know, they're not looking for necessarily, you know, at work you're straight up and button up and, you know, all serious, but I'm not going to quite say a party animal afterwards, but you're a lot more fun afterwards. And now these progressive organizations, or the progressive organizations in general, are looking for people that are the same all the time.
Yeah, well, I think it goes around this idea of a couple of things. One is that, you know, work-life balance is, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily really exist. I don't, you know, people ask you, do you work to live or do you live to work? I don't do either, right? Because to me, they're one and the same. The work that I do is we spend so much time at work that to separate them doesn't necessarily make sense. And I think you see that more and more. And so it's harder for us to separate it. But I think the other thing is there's a VP at Procter & Gamble that put it in a way of, she used to always talk about split personalities. People have split personalities. At home, they're this person that is fun. They're enjoyable to be around. They're maybe a little bit silly. And then they come into the workplace and they're like this robot that doesn't do anything, you know, that doesn't have any type of personality, right? They're just, I'm just here to do my work. And you're not going to get the most effective work out of that person if they come in and they have to switch modes, if they have to change their personality, and if they have to be a different person, if they're going to change who they are in that experience. Instead, if you have someone that comes in that is their self, their best self, right? We're not talking about, you know, if you're that terrible person that is, you know, drinking all the time and rude to other people and all that kind of stuff. It's not like bring that to work, but it's like bring your best self to work with, you know, your own personality traits. You're going to enjoy your work more. And that's good for the individual, but then also for the organization. It's, you know, it's kind of the idea that you have of selfish altruism, where what's in it for me is that you enjoy your work more. What's in it for the organization is that they're going to be more effective, they're going to be more engaged, and they're going to get more done.
Okay. I know I use the term for that called PROI, or a personal return on investment, since there's this social agreement really between an employer, an employee, if you will, or a team leader and a team member, if we want to take it down another step, is that they'll expect certain things. They'll expect them to put out for a particular project or whatnot, and perhaps maybe initially it's not so pleasant. And the employee or the team member is willing to go ahead and invest their time, their effort, their emotion, but they're looking for a return. Not necessarily a financial return, but something personal, whether that be promotional opportunities, whether that be being considered a subject matter expert or whatnot. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think the personal ROI of using humor in the workplace is that you enjoy what you do. You do a little bit better. People who use humor in the workplace are more productive, less stressed, happier. They're also paid more. They're given more opportunities. So there's a lot of personal reasons to do it. You put in it because using humor in the workplace, I train a lot, especially with engineers, that there's a difference between efficiency and effectiveness. Right. There's a big difference between those two things. And going in and just doing your work is kind of strictly as possible is an attempt at efficiency. Whereas effectiveness is doing your work in such a way that you're able to do it against the long haul. And also that you enjoy what you do. You get more results and that kind of thing. And so humor is definitely something about being more effective. Because we could, you know, as a project manager, I used to be able to want to write the email that said, do this thing, right? Send an email to all the resources that I had and say, do this thing. But I recognize that's not very effective. I do things like, hey, so-and-so, hope you had a great weekend. Wondering if you could do this thing. Oh, by the way, here's a link to this thing that I was talking about. That's going to be long-term more effective because it's building a relationship and you're building a relationship with the person that's then going to do work for you, better work for you in the future. So you get personal ROI with that. And then the company gets ROI with that in terms of improved engagement scores and effectiveness and productivity and workplace satisfaction and all that kind of stuff as well. So humor is certainly one of those things that's beneficial for the individual and for the organization.
Would you say for humor to be effective in the workplace, in whatever incarnation it might be, how important is trust?
I think it's very important. I think they go hand in hand, right? Because if you're in an organization where you trust the people around you, you're willing to take a little bit more risk because using humor in a sense is a little bit of a risk, right? There's a risk of what are people going to say? Are people going to get this joke? Are they going to understand this activity that I'm doing that's meant to be a little bit different? And so I think they go hand in hand, but using humor also helps build trust. When we connect with people on different ideas, we become closer together. Like, so if I have a conversation with a coworker or someone that I'm working with and we both watch Game of Thrones, right? We're not talking anything work related, but as we talk about it, it's like, oh my God, Tyrion, this, and did you see this last episode? And I can't believe this happened and all that kind of stuff. We're starting to become closer together. That's more of a humorous conversation, but it does build trust as well. So I think they go hand in hand, and I think it is an important component of it, but humor is also something that can help build that trust as well.
Would that be maybe an extension of the old water cooler conversations?
Yeah, I think so in a sense, right? There's, I don't know, I'm, as an engineer, small talk's always been interesting to me. I joke that, you know, I actually enjoy small talk, not because I like getting to know people, but because I love talking about the weather. But small talk actually is a very crucial thing to build those relationships, to get to know each other a little better so that you remember that when you're seeing, you know, sending an email off to John, that John isn't just this resource on the other side of a computer screen, but that he's an actual human being. And that helps build that relationship a little bit more. And it changes the way that you're going to approach the situation. Because until we work for computer overlords, we have to remember that we're working with people.
It's always about people. When we come back from break, hopefully Andrew can help us out with how managers and organizations in general can be better utilize humor. We'll be right back.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
Are you and your team ready for a leadership takeoff? Called by Bloomberg Businessweek a top business thinker on management trends and issues, Mo Glenner is a dynamic leadership and motivational speaker who has transformed cultures in companies big and small. As a professional GA pilot, Mo has created the Be the Pilot in Command and Leadership Takeoff series of personal and professional leadership keynotes, breakouts, and workshops designed to bring out the very best. Featured on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, Inc. Magazine, Leadership Excellence, LinkedIn Pulse, and other leading outlets, Mo will bring his highly engaging, informative, and entertaining talks and lead your team on a memorable journey to better leadership. Book Mo today for your next event at 574-274-7387 or go to www.leadershiptakeoff.com and be prepared for takeoff. After all, the sky is not the limit. It's just the beginning.
friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to Leadership Takeoff. To reach Mo Glenner or today's guest, please call us at 1-888-346-9141. Again, that's 1-888-346-9141. You may also want to send an email to mo@leadershiptakeoff.com. Now, let's continue with Leadership Takeoff.
And we're back with Andrew Garvin. Andrew, how can managers and organizations be better at bringing this humor in? Are there any tactics or tips, strategies? What would be the best way to proceed?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first area is just to start, right? Part of it is people think that, you know, they don't recognize the value of humor. And so part of what I'm trying to do is teach people that, yeah, it is valuable. It's going to make you more productive. And so start, you know, it's not like you have to plan out how you're going to be funny with your friends. It's the same way kind of in the workplace. There are certainly resources to help. But my thing is to pick, you know, the next working day. So we're up Friday. So take a Tuesday, if you're taking Memorial Day off, and find what's one way that I can do my work today a little bit differently. And certainly I've created resources to help people with that. I have a book, 501 Ways to Use Humor in the Workplace. So if people are like, I want to use humor, but I don't know how, they can go through that book. I have an online course where people can kind of read that stuff, but it's really more about starting. And the idea is, again, don't think necessarily about being funny, but think about how can I make this a little bit more fun? How can I do it in a way that's positive and inclusive, that brings people together, that puts a little bit of a spin on it, whether it's adding images to a presentation or starting off a meeting with a little bit of music or asking an interesting question at a networking event. Instead of asking, what do you do, ask, you know, what's the coolest thing that you've worked on in the last 3 months? Take one thing from your day that's coming up on that Tuesday and say, how can I do this in a way that's a little bit different? And then kind of repeat that each day, and you start to build this habit of humor, and it starts to change how you approach your work, how you think of it. And for me, it creates what I consider a humor mindset. You start to see it. It becomes an easy process, and you just kind of start to naturally use it more in your work.
Are there any particular ways of getting started? I mean, obviously, we have to start somewhere. The journey of a lifetime begins with the first step. But is there something, let's say, if someone wanted to go ahead and start off with a particular exercise or two, would there be something that you would recommend?
I would say the easiest way to probably start is in conversation. Have a conversation with a coworker that isn't specifically about work, and ask them something about, you know, again, if it is about work, ask them what's the coolest thing that they've worked on. And then also be willing to share a story. When someone asks you a question, don't just give a standard response. Share a story about it. Give the context, the action, and the results. So business storytelling, context, action, results. And think of that. And that even is just a small, it's the easiest way to connect with another person to get started. Again, there's hundreds of ways that you can get into it, but that may be conversation. So it doesn't feel like this big presentation that you have to do. It's just approaching things in a slightly different way with a slightly different mindset.
Now, certainly it appears that humor, or just in general, keeping things at a little bit lighter, can be used effectively for a lot of things. But are there some things that humor shouldn't be used for? You know, any limits or restraints, constraints of any sort?
Yeah, I think that humor, part of it is timing of it, right? So there are kind of three reasons typically why humor is inappropriate. The first is that it's an inappropriate subject. So this would be things like that you wouldn't normally talk about in the workplace. So just because you're telling a joke, it doesn't mean it's appropriate to talk about sex or that kind of thing, or racism or anything like that. The second reason why it can be inappropriate is it's an inappropriate target. So if the target has a humor, so if you're poking fun at someone that isn't part of the group or isn't part of the joke, but you're making fun of someone, then it's inappropriate. And then also an inappropriate time. So if some, you know, if you just announced massive layoffs at your organization and then you're the person announcing it, you try to make a joke about, you know, how big your yacht is, probably not going to be a joke that lands with that group. And so I don't think that there's necessarily any subject or any organization that humor can't work, but there are periods of time and subjects that aren't appropriate for the workplace.
Now, if you had to give a few takeaways, you know, the things that you want most people to remember about humor or improv or how that can more effectively be used in the workplace, what would some of those be?
Sure. I think so the biggest takeaway that I would take that I end my keynotes with is this idea of what I call scary math. I love math, obsessed with math. If you ask me what my favorite number is, I say all of them, right? Love math. But there is such a thing as scary math. And the scary math is this, is that you get 168 hours in a week. It doesn't matter who you are, what you do, whatever. You have 168 hours a week. If you spend about average of 7 hours a night sleeping, right, that's 49 hours spent each week asleep, leaving 119 hours awake, meaning that if you work roughly 40 hours a week, say a minimum of 40 hours each week, that's 33.6% of your adult awake life spent in the workplace. And with one third of your adult awake life on the line, why not choose to make it a little bit more fun? Why not choose to enjoy it? And so it again goes back to that idea of starting. And I think picking one thing to do tomorrow or today or next week is a great starting point. And if you need resources, great, go out and find it, but consciously make the choice that it's something that you're going to do. And be willing to have fun, you know, smile a little bit more. That's maybe a quick way to get into it is try putting a smile on your face and see how it changes how you enter a meeting and talk with other people.
Now, if you're in an organization and the culture doesn't seem to be necessarily friendly or, I don't want to use the word appropriate, but conducive to humor or even bringing these soft skills. But obviously, this is something that's very important, something that's a must-have. How would you suggest proceeding there?
Well, I think that, you know, so some people say we have that, I mentioned that study, 98% of CEOs prefer job candidates with a sense of humor. So then you say, what happens if I work for the 2% that don't? Part of it is maybe educating them on the value of humor. But even then, people can't control how you do your own work. So, you know, if you're going through email, one of the things we all have to do is go through email. You might listen to music that is kind of girl talk or some other type of music that is high beats per minute that you enjoy. But say you work in an organization where they say, oh, you can't even use headphones while you're doing this. Like, well, they can't control what you're thinking about. So sometimes when I am getting tired of going through email, I'll start to read emails in a different accent in my head. And it's like, oh, okay, that's, you know, how would this sound if this was a British person that had written it to me or if I was reading it as a British person? So there are things that you can do where it doesn't impact anyone else. There is no outward signs of it happening, but it changes the approach that you take and something that you can kind of do yourself. And I would say you can start there. You can start using humor as your own personal productivity process to help yourself.
So at the very least, your work might be more enjoyable even if the culture itself doesn't necessarily support it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that you can do is humor is a great way to strategically disengage, which is just fancy corporate terminology for taking a break, right? We know that sustained chronic stress over time is a bad thing, but if we have stress in a block of period and then we're able to reduce that stress and do something fun or enjoyable, then we're actually going to be more productive in the long haul. And so strategic disengagement of listening to a comedy CD on your way home from work or taking a 5-minute break to go into the bathroom and splash water on your head like you're in a action movie and you just got through like a long car chase or whatever. You know, small things that you can do throughout the day that help keep yourself sane but also refresh you and get you going back to work so you prevent burnout.
Andrew, how can people reach you to learn more?
Sure. So probably the easiest way, I'm on Twitter at Humor That Works. My website is humorthatworks.com or my email is andrew@humorthatworks.com and certainly accessible all those ways. More contact information is available on my website, but I am certainly of the Gen Y generation, so I love the electronic digital type of contact. So anything electronically, they can reach me.
Fantastic.
And also you mentioned yes. David before, I'll be speaking at Funny Biz Conference in San Francisco in June and at the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor Conference at the end of May in Philadelphia. So if you're in either of those regions, you can check me out live.
Fantastic. Andrew, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Next week, we'll be continuing our conversation on creative leadership, We'll be talking more about the creative principles, things that I'll call the nifty nine, or nine critical components for more creative and more innovative leadership. Until then, remember, the sky is not the limit. It's only the beginning. I'm Mo Glenner. So long.
Thank you for tuning in for Leadership Takeoff. Be sure to join your host, Mo Glenner, again next Friday at noon Pacific Time and 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. We hope to have you on board for our next show.